Business Radio with Lindsay Williams is proudly sponsored by Prudential Investment Managers.
It's just after 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 25th of July, 2017. I'm Lindsay Williams, and this is Fine Business Radio on FMR 101.3 FM. And this show is proudly brought to you by Prudential Investment Managers. Coming up is an hour of local and international business and markets. The show tonight lines up like this. Markets are brought to you by Kratos Capital, the JSE creeping higher. We've had results out from Anglo American's Kumba Iron Ore. We've had a few corporate announcements as well. The markets will be expertly analysed by Greg Davies, who's the chief trader at Kratos Capital. After that, we get into Fine Business Radio's America First Edition as Mr. Trump speaks in Ohio to steelmakers. We are going to speak to three North Americans from different fields. The first is Jim Rogers. He started the Quantum Fund with George Soros all those years ago. He left the United States for America nearly two decades ago now and moved to Singapore so his young children could learn Chinese. We find out what he thinks about the markets. And from what I hear from an interview with Business Insider, he doesn't think much of them. So Jim Rogers, don't miss him coming up straight after the markets. Then we speak to Lee Adler, the editor and proprietor of the Wall Street Examiner. For 8 years, he's been absolutely correct on the S&P 500 index. But suddenly, he's saying, get ready to go short. Don't do it right now, but get ready to go short. So that's going to be interesting as well, backing up what Jim Rogers is saying potentially, and also backing up what Jim Rogers is saying, I'm sure, is Peter Schiff from Euro Pacific Capital. He speaks to us from his home in Connecticut in the United States. He was on a panel with Jim Rogers in Las Vegas just a few days ago, and they have got an idea of what they think is going to happen to the market. They disagree on the US dollar. I know that. We find out from Peter Schiff why. It's a fascinating show. It's America First. And after that, as always on a Tuesday, we speak to an investment professional from the Signia Group. This week, we talk to the retail manager at that institution about how to read an investment statement, all the tricks. This is Fine Business Radio, FMR 101.3 FM, brought to you by Prudential Investment Managers. Please stay tuned. Let's start with the markets and start with the JSE Securities Exchange, where today the banks were down 0.9%, financials down 2/3, industrial shares 1 2/3% weaker, resources stocks, well, this is where it gets much better, up 3 2/3%, gold shares down 0.25%, and platinum's up 0.75%, with the all share itself up 0.25% to 54,499, was 54,800 plus at one stage, and don't forget the all-time record high, not that long ago, 55,200 plus, so we were very close, and the value traded a little bit better than yesterday, 17.1 billion, the value traded in rand terms. Speaking of the rand, back above 13 against the US dollar, 13.03 the dollar rand, euro rand 15.19, British pound against the rand 16.96 and the euro dollar 116.55. Gold down $5 per ounce to $12.50. Platinum down a couple to $9.26. The oil price having a bit of a surge, up $1.56 to $49.64. That's Brent crude in London. Speaking of London, the FTSE as the JSE finished up 0.8%. And in the States, another record high for the Dow Jones, up 0.5% as we close. These numbers brought to you by Kratos Capital. There are many tax-free funds out there. Few offer the performance that Prudential's do. The range includes award-winning funds like Prudential Inflation Plus, Dividend Maximizer, and Enhanced SA Property Tracker, as well as long-term top quartile performer, the Prudential Balanced Fund. If you aren't already investing with Prudential, contact their client services team on 0860 105 775. That's 0860 105 775, or visit prudential.co.za. Consistency is the only currency that matters. Prudential Investment Managers is a licensed financial services provider. The JSE at one stage today was within a whisker of an all-time record high, a 52-week high anyway. On the telephone now to describe the action, Greg Davies, chief trader at Kratos Capital. Look at Kumba Iron Ore, Greg. This thing was 30 rand a share or 35 rand a share, and now it's paid a dividend of nearly 16 rand a share. What a story.
Yes, Lindsay, we came in this morning at 8 o'clock this morning to Kumba's results. A much improved cash position and surprising the market, as you mentioned there, with a much stronger dividend interest of 15 Rand 97. So probably do 30 Rand for the year. But as you pointed out, January 2016, the share was 25 Rand a share. So gosh, it's quite the turnaround story. Yeah.
That's incredible the way these commodities do things. Sasol came out with a trading update that didn't look good, but it seemed to get swept away with the rest of the resources stocks and ended up quite well, I think.
Yes, I think they sort of gave good reasoning for how they've battled. I suppose that looking at the rand was quite stronger over the trading period. It has weakened a little bit in time. So Sasol performing nicely, up 4.2% today, 387 rand 58. I must say, from an investment point of view, it just feels like it's been grinding between 360 and 400. It feels like for 100 years. It's probably been for 3 years.
Greg, we'll have to leave it because your phone's making funny noises. And but we'll pick up on these matters in greater detail tomorrow when we've got time and when you pay your phone bill. That's Greg Davies, the chief trader at Kratos Capital. A few days ago, I watched a YouTube video of an interview that was conducted by the excellent Henry Blodgett from Business Insider. And the interviewee was James B. Rogers, Jim Rogers, the legendary investor and author. And it went on for about half an hour, and it wasn't particularly pleasant. I mean, the subject matter wasn't pleasant. The interview was pleasant enough. On the telephone now is Jim Rogers, speaking to us from Singapore. Jim, you were talking in expansive terms about something that has been in everybody's mind for quite a while now, i.e. the impending correction in the market. And you think it might be more than just a normal correction?
Well, Lindsay, we've had major economic problems in the U.S. every 4 to 8 years since the beginning of the Republic. We're going to have another one. The head of the Federal Reserve in the United States, the head of the central bank, Janet Yellen, says we're not ever going to have a problem again. But if you believe her, then you should stop listening to me right now. But we have had them every 4 to 8 years forever. And in my view, we will have another one. And the next one, then, is going to be the worst in our lifetime. That's very simple. In 2008, we had a problem because of too much debt. Well, now the debt is much, much, much higher than it was in 2008. Many people have talked about austerity, but nobody has reduced their debt. Everybody's increased their debt.
1987 was the one I remember the most. I was a young greenhorn on a trading desk, and I was bamboozled by sell orders. That was an extraordinary moment. 2000 was another one that I was involved in. 2008, as a broadcaster, I've been involved in. There was Asia in the early to mid-1990s. What you're saying is that in your experience, which is much greater than mine, this is going to be the worst in your lifetime, which means that it'll be fairly cataclysmic, I would have thought.
Well, it's going to be very painful for many people. People should become knowledgeable. They should listen to you, listen to your broadcast, so they can learn what's going on. If they become knowledgeable, the chances are they'll get prepared, and it'll be okay. See, people who are unprepared, who believe Janet Yellen, they will never have a problem again in our lifetimes, those are the people who should be worried.
Yeah, I remember watching another YouTube video. It was on the 28th of August 2006, and it was a chap called Peter Schiff, and he was laughed off the CNBC screens. He sketched out a scenario for the next recession in the United States of America, and of course it occurred. Now, maybe it was just coincidence or lucky timing on his part. But some people will say, well, you're saying it now, and you've said it before, or other people have said it before. Why now? And why are you so specific in your interview with Henry Blodgett about the timing, i.e. late 2017?
Well, what I basically was saying, then we are going to have another one. And the next one's going to be the worst in our lifetime. I suspect it will be late 2017, 2018, but I don't know. But when it comes, and it will come, despite Mrs. Yellen, it's going to be pretty, pretty bad. Now, but Lindsay, remember, these things don't just happen one day. Normally, I mean, it starts slowly, and it builds up over a year or two or three. In 2007, Iceland went bankrupt, or most people never heard of Iceland. Much less that it could go bankrupt. But then later, Ireland went bankrupt, and later Bear Stearns went bankrupt, and later Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, and a year or two later, everybody knew there was a problem. That's the way these things work. They don't just wake up one day and say, okay, this is it, folks. Everything collapses that day, and you start over. It builds up and declines for a long time.
One of the great comedians of the world, a New Yorker, and I know you're a great fan of New York, despite the fact you've now moved to Singapore. Jerry Seinfeld once said famously, it's like rocking a Coke machine. You have to do it slowly, first of all, rock it from side to side before you push it over. And that seems to me what might happen with the market. And another North American, Lee Adler from the Wall Street Examiner, said exactly the same thing to me last night. He said that it's going to start slowly because of liquidity being withdrawn, and then it's going to get quite nasty. Would you agree liquidity or the withdrawal of liquidity is one of the reasons?
Well, that has often been the case when we've had bear markets. You know, the central banks, for whatever reason, start tightening and tightening and tightening. they rarely do it all in one day or one week even. And so it does start slowly. It's nearly always started slowly. You can go back to nearly every bear market in history. They start slowly. They build up. They build up. They build up. Finally, there's a panic at the end. But when the panic comes, it's usually the bottom.
You are an adopted New Yorker. I mean, you're from the south of the United States of America. You lived in New York. And I remember years ago, we had a discussion, a forthright discussion about which was the greatest city in the world. I, of course, as a Londoner, said London. You said New York. And I'm sort of moving towards your line of thinking there, Jim. But you're not there anymore. And there seems to be a bit of a New York mentality at odds with Washington at the moment in the form of Donald J. Trump. Do you think politics might also intervene here?
Oh, no, definitely. And what will happen is, that Mr. Trump, who's basically a protectionist and an interventionist at heart, when things start going wrong, he may start bringing back protectionism, which will just make things worse. He'll certainly bring back in some kind of intervention, which will make things worse, because inevitably they get it wrong in Washington. And Mr. Trump has gotten it wrong more than he's gotten it right. So I suspect that'll just make it worse. And that's another reason it's going to be the worst in our lifetime.
Yeah, it's quite odd, isn't it, that you see President Xi in Davos sort of promoting free trade, and the leader of the free world, so-called Donald Trump, is going into his protectionist cocoon, if you like. And I suppose, prophetically, that was one of the reasons why you moved to Singapore. You say in an interview that earlier on I read from the New York Times that maybe you should have moved to China, but you're in Singapore. Are you still enthusiastic about the region in general?
Yes. But I'm mainly here. Well, first, I'm very, very enthusiastic, yes, but I came here so that my children would speak Chinese. That was my main motivation, and it has worked. They both speak native Chinese, but Singapore is not China. The reason we didn't move to China itself was because China is so filthy. China is terribly polluted, and I didn't want to have to breathe all that stuff, and I didn't want my children to breathe it.
What do you do now? If you're predicting what I think you're predicting, how are you positioning yourself either as a hedge against such an event or for the emergence of a new economy, a new world economy, once that event is over? Where are you positioned at the moment?
Well, first, I do want to say, having just said I moved to Asia because of China, so my children will speak Chinese, I do want to point out that in the next bear market, China's going to have problems too. China will have people go bankrupt. In 2008, China had huge amounts of money saved for a rainy day. When it started raining, they started spending the money and helped save the world. But this time around, Lindsay, they've got a lot of debt too. Historically, for many reasons, they didn't have debt. I mean, nobody would lend money to Mao Zedong. But now even China has debt, and you're going to see bankruptcies in China in the foreseeable future, which will just scare a lot of people, including me. It'll make things worse again. How am I positioned? Well, I own some Chinese shares. China market is down 50% from its all-time high. I own some Asian shares, mainly through ETFs, because they're still mainly depressed markets in Asia. I own some Russian shares, Russian bonds. Russia's one of the most hated markets in the world. I own a lot of U.S. dollars, which you may think is strange, given that the United States is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. But when the turmoil comes, Lindsay, people will look for a safe haven, and historically, they have turned to the U.S. dollar. They shouldn't, but because it's the largest debtor nation in the world, but they will again. The U.S. dollar will go higher because of the turmoil. It might even turn into a bubble, depending on how bad things get. Then hopefully I'll be smart enough to sell my dollars and put it somewhere else. You see how easy it is to get rich, Lindsay?
Very easy indeed. Look at the bond market, for example.
I just made us both rich in 30 seconds.
It's so easy. I mean, I don't know why these investment analysts get paid so much money, Jim, when there's people like you around. You're a famous traveler. And again, in the past, we've spoken about Africa, and I've sort of got the sense you've never really invested in Africa. And is that still the case? Because people tell me about the emergence of Africa and the yield seekers come to Africa and look at the demographics, etc. Have you ever invested a cent in Africa?
Oh, yes. I was the first foreigner to invest in Ivory Coast. I was the first foreigner to invest in several markets. In Zimbabwe, I have invested in Botswana. At the moment, I have few small investments in Zimbabwe. I've come back into Zimbabwe, not because anything good is happening, but because someday Mr. Mugabe is going to die, I guess. I guess he's going to die. He says he's not. But no, I have invested in Africa before, and I'm starting in a small way back into Zimbabwe now.
You don't mention South Africa. Do you find it sad when you read about South Africa and the appalling situation politically and economically that such a rich country, both in resources and in its people, is doing so badly?
Don't you find it sad? I would think most people find it sad, of course, except the people ruining South Africa. They don't think it's sad. They think they're doing a good job. No, it's a very shame. South Africa was far and away the richest country, the most developed country in Africa for many years. And now, well, it's sad.
What about gold? You've been keen on gold in the past. Is it as easy as it used to be in the old days during times of economic and political strife to buy gold? Or has the investment map been slightly skewed or complicated since those days?
Well, I own gold, but I haven't bought serious gold in quite a long time. I expect a chance to buy gold again at under $1,000 per ounce. If it gets there, I hope I'm smart enough to buy a lot. If it doesn't, I own plenty of gold and silver. Don't worry. But when, you know, before this is over, Lindsay, gold is going to go much, much higher, because when people lose confidence in governments and in money, they always turn to gold and silver. Maybe they shouldn't, but they always have. So no, before this is over, gold will turn into a very, very big bull, might even turn into a bubble before it's over. If it becomes a bubble, I'll have to sell my gold. I don't want to. I'd like for my children and grandchildren to have it. But if it turns into a bubble, obviously I'll have to sell.
Final question, and this is the biggest bubble of them all. I was looking at the U.S. Treasury market on a 40-year chart. This has been the biggest bull market, one of the biggest bull markets in history. I looked at the S&P, and that's had a couple of wobbles, but the bond market really hasn't had a serious wobble. Do you think this will unravel, and will it be because of the actions, the unraveling of policies that are currently in place at the BOJ and the ECB and, of course, the U.S. Federal Reserve, which is meeting today?
Yeah, all the major central banks have been taking their cue from the U.S. and printing a huge amount of money and driving interest rates to historically unheard of levels. So when it unravels, it's going to be a big, big nightmare. If you go back and look at bond markets in the U.S., we'll use that as an example. You know, they've lasted 30 or 35 years. You know, bonds made their low in 1946. They made their high, or interest rates made their low in 46, and they made their high in 1981, and they've been going down since. Well, that's 36 years. So you have these great long bull and bear markets in interest rates in the U.S., and when the next one turns around, Lindsay, I won't tell you how high interest rates are going, because you'll hang up the phone. You'll think I'm a nut. But they're going to go much, much higher over the next 20, 30 years, just as they always have.
And of course, all this is great for broadcasters like myself. You said to Henry Blodgett from businessinsider.com, an excellent website, you said, well, this is good for you, Henry, because people, when things are bad, listen more. But unfortunately, when things are really, really bad, which you've sketched out, people don't advertise because they've got no money. They go into their shells. So it's a double-edged sword, Jim.
Well, yes, but at least you'll have some job. You may not be making much money, but somebody has to report all that's going on. A lot of people won't have any job, but you have job security because at least we're going to listen to you. You may not be making much money. You may be broadcasting from down at the public park, but at least somebody will be paying attention.
Jim, thank you very much for your time this evening. That's Jim Rogers, legendary investor and author, speaking to us from Singapore. Air France now flies all year round from Cape Town to Paris. Fly from the mother city to the city of love this winter and experience the long, hot and vibrant European summer. And of course, Paris is the perfect hub for onward travel to the rest of Europe. Go to airfrance.co.za for more details and for our regular special offers. That's airfrance.co.za.
Fine Business Radio is proudly sponsored by Prudential Investment Managers.
Prentice Wealth was announced as the top boutique wealth manager in the country in the 2017 Intellidex Wealth Manager and Private Bank Survey, and also was one of the first companies to be recognized as an FPI-approved professional practice. Visit www.bwm.co.za, that's www.bwm.co.za, for details of our solutions and also information on our highly qualified advisors. Prentice Wealth is an authorized financial services provider. I met my next guest in Central Park in New York a number of years ago. We were doing a documentary. I was the interviewer. He was the interviewee. And then we became friends. And then we started talking more regularly on radio about his passion, which is calling the market, of course. He doesn't call the market from fundamentals, not so a little bit of technical analysis here and there, but it's based on liquidity analysis. His name is Lee Adler, the editor of the Wall Street Examiner. And Lee, when this bull market started, what was it, March 2009, when the S&P was 666 or 667, throughout that period that we've known each other, you have never wavered. Occasionally you said, well, maybe it's going to roll over a little bit here and there, but the bull market is still intact. I just got a piece from you which says the following: liquidity analysis says get ready to go short. Are you saying now that this multi-year bull market, which has been creeping along over the last few months without great conviction, is starting to show some signs of cracking?
Yeah, absolutely. But we're very early in the topping process. And basically, the Fed has already come out and said that they're going to start tightening. They call it normalization, quote unquote. And normalization is a euphemism for draining funds from the banking system and shrinking their balance sheet and tightening credit. That's the big step in terms of the U.S. market. The Fed is, of course, a 700-pound gorilla of the U.S. market. And what the Fed does affects the whole world. By the same token, the ECB affects the whole world. The Bank of Japan, to a lesser extent, affects the whole world. So they're way behind the Fed. The ECB has reaffirmed its intent to continue printing money and pumping money into the markets from now till kingdom come. But the fact is that the scuttlebutt is out there, that Europe is recovering. And the rationale for the ECB to continue this easing process, this pumping money into the system, that rationale no longer exists. So it's just a matter of time before the ECB declares that they're going to cut back on their money printing. And the BOJ will follow eventually. So that once those three central banks are no longer injecting funds into the system, the markets are going to top out, the U.S. market in particular. So the Fed's already got the ball rolling. At some point, maybe at tomorrow's meeting, they're going to announce it, or in September, the Fed will announce that it is going to actively begin shrinking its balance sheet. I think that's going to put the final top on the U.S. market. As long as the ECB and the BOJ are still printing, however, I think we're going to have more of a trading market where we're going to see both the upside, the downside. Buy the dip may still work to an extent, but you're not going to get the extended upside where you can buy and hold. And then sometime next year, the ECB is going to get to the point where it will say, okay, we're not going to buy any more securities in the market. We're just going to hold our balance sheet flat. At that point, I think we start actively seeing lower lows and lower highs. In other words, a kind of the beginning of a kind of grinding bear market.
But why is this going to happen? You say it's all to do with liquidity, but everyone will say, well, we know about this already. We're prepared for this. It's flagged. The laws of political correctness and corporate governance and Fed governance and central bank meetings and press conferences almost incessantly means that we know about it. So why would the market be surprised?
Well, the market won't be surprised, and the central banks are certainly very good at telegraphing to their friends in the business exactly what to expect. But, you know, money talks. And when the Fed actually begins to withdraw money from the market system, from this vast pool of cash that feeds the markets, that means that the amount of money is going to shrink, so the demand is going to fall off. But it doesn't mean that governments are going to stop issuing securities. The U.S. government is going to continually issue new securities to pay its deficit spending at $50, $60, $80 billion a month. Other governments around the world will continue to issue securities. But the fact is that the central banks have been there to buy up most of the security issuance. That's going to stop. The central banks aren't going to be there to absorb all of the new government securities that are issued. So that means that the money to buy these securities is going to have to come out of other assets or what's left of the existing pool of cash. And when there is less demand and more supply, ergo, prices will come down.
What does that mean for stocks? I mean, have a look at some stocks. Like, for example, we have one in South Africa called Naspers, which is a short for Nasionale Pers. It started off as a newspaper company decades and decades ago. It now owns a decent chunk of Tencent in Hong Kong. And that's the reason why the South African market is holding up, because nearly 20% of our stock market capitalization is attributed to Naspers. You've got Netflix and Facebook and Amazon and Apple and everything else. Why would it affect those stocks? You're talking about government securities and liquidity. Are you saying that some of this liquidity goes into these high-flying stocks and it's just going to dry up and therefore they have to come back?
Sure. Investment managers can put their cash into stocks or bonds. Let's simplify it and pretend there's only these two asset classes. And obviously there are other classes of assets that they can go to as well. But they shift back and forth all the time between bonds and stocks. So it's essentially, we're looking at investments as a class of something that investors buy. So if bonds compete with stocks, if there are more bonds to be bought and yields are rising as a result, then money is going to be shifted away. Asset managers are going to move away from stocks and move into bonds where they can get a more secure return at a lower risk. So to some extent, all these prices are tied together. I think we're going to have bear markets in both stocks and bonds, again, simply because there's going to be an increasing supply of investment paper, mostly debt securities, and there's going to be less cash around to absorb it. So that's what it boils down to, supply and demand. Demand is driven by cash, and supply is mostly driven by the ever-increasing supply of government securities.
You say here, U.S. macro liquidity has grown slowly over the past year, decelerating in recent months. The current growth rate is just over 2%. Meanwhile, stock price inflation has surged, with prices up 16% in a year. This has created a large divergence between measures of U.S. stock prices and the Composite Liquidity Index, the CLI. The market has become overextended due to excessive bullish sentiment. What's the timeline? Of course, Mrs. Yellen and her team can turn these things around quite quickly. They can say, actually, no, this is all data dependent. We thought we might have to raise rates. We thought we might have to indulge ourselves in quantitative tightening rather than quantitative easing, but we've changed our minds. They can change their minds, can't they?
Yeah, they can change their mind, but they probably won't. They normally don't change their minds without warning. They may delay the tightening somewhat, but I think that their decision to stop printing money and the decision to begin to quote-unquote normalize the balance sheet, which is to shrink the balance sheet, I think that decision is based more on asset bubbles than it's based on inflation and economic growth. I don't see any reason why the U.S. would grow at a different rate than, you know, 1% to 3%, the range it's been growing in for several years. It's basically based on demographics. The U.S. economic data is probably going to remain in this narrow range of slow growth. I don't think there's going to be any real incentive for the Fed to reverse course in any time in the foreseeable future. And normally they will telegraph that months in advance, again, because they want their friends in the business, the primary dealers, to be able to adjust their books, their proprietary trading books, to be in line with whatever Fed policy is going to be. So they put the word out there. And then they wait and wait and wait to actually act. Eventually, they get around to it. Once they say it, it means it's going to happen, but it's probably not going to happen for 6 months or a year or something along those lines. So I think if they're going to reverse course, they're going to give plenty of warning. And I think first, they are going to make a real effort to shrink that balance sheet and maybe knock a trillion or so off of the total size of the $4.5 trillion Fed balance sheet. That's going to have a very real impact. Now, part of that impact may be an economic slowdown. And how much pain is the Fed willing to bear? Hard to say. But I think they're willing to put up with a 10 or 20% decline in stocks before they really get serious about reversing course again. And I think that ultimately they're not going to be able to control this. You know, the Fed always goes into these tightening cycles with the idea that they're going to engineer a soft landing. Nine times out of 10, they don't get the soft landing. They get a much harsher environment. So, yeah, I think that ultimately things will spin out of control on the downside, just as they always do in a bear market cycle. I don't think the Fed will be able to keep these things under control. We also have to deal with the idea that the market will lose confidence in the ability of central banks to maintain control. And that could become a self-feeding frenzy. I don't see that in the next year or so, but maybe 18 months, 2 years, 2.5 years down the line, we could get into that kind of environment.
Okay, when's it going to start? How's it going to manifest itself? You said earlier in the year when the S&P was around about 2390, I think it was, you said you got 2465 as a target. We've achieved that. It's an all-time record high. We're just above it at the moment. What's going to happen? Sideways churning, top formation being formed, and then a slow sell-off? Or is it going to be one of those massive evacuations and we're going to come down swiftly?
I think that in the near term, we're close enough to 2,500 on the S&P 500 that it's pretty much a done deal. But the technical indicators point to a range of 2,470, which we've already reached, to 2,520 at this point. And I think it's a good bet that they'll get over 2,500 in the near term. There are some things going on with the debt ceiling in the United States that the Treasury has been paying down some of its internal debt, and that has enabled it to continue selling debt to the public on a regular schedule. But they're getting low on cash now. They probably have enough cash to pay the bills for another two and a half months. Somewhere along the line in this 2.5 month period, the Treasury is probably going to decide to start using its cash to directly pay for its outlays, its regular monthly bills. And when it does that, it means it's going to stop issuing new debt. It's not going to pay down any internal debt, and it's not going to have room to issue new debt to the public as a result. When they stop issuing new debt, when they stop the flow of new debt securities to the market, there's going to be a little excess cash around. So it's counterintuitive, but the market should rally until the point where they actually run out of cash. The U.S. Congress agrees to lift the debt limit so that the Treasury can start borrowing again. So in the near term, when they stop borrowing, that's going to be bullish. But when they start borrowing again, they're going to have a lot of ground they're going to have to make up. They're going to have to issue an immense amount of debt, and that should send the market down sharply. That'll happen probably in October, November. So I expect the final top on this leg to be between now and say mid-October, give or take a few weeks, and then we get our first leg down. Early next year, or late in the fourth quarter, you probably get another rally to either test this high or make a minor new high. But I think it ends by early in the first quarter of 2018.
Okay, so you say October, November, we start to get to the top put in place and maybe a bit of a washout, or at least
we'll see some kind of washout in that part of the fall.
Interesting stuff. How do we follow you, Lee Adler?
Well, you can come and visit me at wallstreetexaminer.com, and we have a lot of free information that we publish on the site, and you can find the information about my proprietary subscriber material also at wallstreetexaminer.com.
And that is trading advice and levels and that sort of thing. And not, I mean, sure. The free advice is something I read all the time, but if you're a pro trader, this is what you really should be doing, subscribing to your service.
Well, I hope so.
Lee Adler, thank you very much for your time. That's Lee Adler from the wallstreetexaminer.com. Did you know that Prudential Investment Managers is Morningstar's 2017 winner of the Best Fund House with a Large Fund Range for the second year in a row? The Morningstar Award recognizes Prudential's consistently strong performance across their range of unit trusts. To find out how you can invest with them and benefit from their consistency, visit prudential.co.za. Consistency is the only currency that matters. Prudential Investment Managers is a licensed financial services provider.
Fine Business Radio is proudly sponsored by Prudential Investment Managers.
Let's complete our triumvirate of American commentators. This is the America First edition of Fine Business Radio. On the telephone now from Connecticut is Peter Schiff from Euro Pacific Capital. Peter, you were hosting a breakfast with a previous interviewee on the show of mine, Jim Rogers. You were in Las Vegas at the Freedom First conference. What came out of that breakfast between the two of you? Did you concur?
Well, I didn't host the breakfast. It was being hosted by Freedom Fest, which was a conference that we were both participating in. And we had a breakfast together where the two of us discussed our views. And pretty much, as is normally the case, Jim Rogers and I see eye to eye on just about everything. The only point of contention was the path of the dollar's ultimate destruction. Jimmy Rogers believes that the dollar is a flawed currency and is going to collapse. He just thinks it's going to rise significantly before it collapses, because he thinks during this coming crisis, once again, people are going to buy the dollar as a safe haven, and the dollar's safe haven status will lead to a rally before it ultimately collapses. And that's where I disagree. I think the dollar safe haven buying that we had in 2008 is not going to be repeated in the next crisis, because I think the next crisis is going to be focused on the dollar. And so I don't think the dollar is going to be a safe haven from itself. And, you know, I think the dollar rally that Jim Rogers is waiting for already happened. The dollar had a huge rally from 2008 to 2015. In fact, most of that rally occurred in 2014 and 2015. But ever since the Fed raised rates in December of 2015, the dollar really stopped going up. And that's because the entire dollar rally was predicated on the belief that the Fed was going to raise rates. And so it was already factored in. It was discounted into the market. And by the time the Fed got around to the first rate hike, it was a buy the rumor, sell the fact. But the problem is the fact is not going to live up to the rumor, because we're not going to get anywhere near as many rate hikes as the markets believed. The Fed is never going to normalize or shrink its balance sheet. I think before long, the Fed is going to be cutting rates again and doing another round of quantitative easing, because I believe we're going back into recession. And, you know, if you look at the final rally the dollar had after the Trump election, the dollar index rose about 6% from the election of Donald Trump to the inauguration of Donald Trump. And since then, it's fallen by more than 10%. The dollar, as we speak, is at a new low for the year. Against many currencies, it's at more than a two-year low. And so I think technically the dollar has broken and it's headed down, and I think it's going to make new lows. And I asked Jimmy, I said, you know, when are you going to sell your dollars, Jim? Because I'm pretty sure that he's on the wrong side of this trade right now.
Yeah, it's gone from around about 104 against the euro to 116, 117. And in fact, a theme of Fine Business Radio for the last 4 weeks has been my contention that the dollar was overbought and would go down. Whether it's a long-term dollar bear market, I don't know. You disagree with Jim Rogers on the US dollar. You do agree, though, on what potentially might happen to the US stock market. He named names. He named October and November as the potential time for the start of the bear market as he sees it. Do you agree with that?
Well, there I don't know. I mean, I've never been able to really time when something is going to happen. It's difficult to say. I do think that we are in a very vulnerable situation in the market. And what I think people are underestimating is the degree to which the Federal Reserve is going to prevent the market from falling. What's really been powering the market, other than the quantitative easing and cheap money, has been the Yellen put, which really was initially a Greenspan put, which became the Bernanke put. And what this means is that any weakness in the stock market will be met with Fed action to prop it back up. And that's what the Fed did when they raised rates initially in December of 2015. The market went down, and then the Fed called off future rate hikes and, you know, basically enabled the market to rise. And sometimes they start talking about more quantitative easing. And the question is, did that put expire with the election of Donald Trump? And if it didn't expire, where's the strike price? You know, I think that the Federal Reserve is not that interested in trying to make President Trump look good. I think that the reason that they wanted to prop up the stock market under Obama was because Yellen liked Obama, wanted to help make him look better, and she really liked Hillary Clinton, and she wanted to help you know, Hillary Clinton get elected. And a stock market, you know, decline, a bear market on Obama's watch would have made it difficult for her to accomplish that. But I don't think that Yellen has much love for Donald Trump. I think the Fed is eager to blame a bear market in stocks and a recession on Donald Trump, use that as a way to deflect criticism from itself. And I think Trump has basically handed that issue to the Fed by claiming ownership of the stock market. You know, when he was a candidate, he called it a bubble. Now he says it's a bull market and it's his fault and it's all about his policies. He owns the economy. He's put the Trump label on this and branded it the Trump economy. You know, when he was running for office, he correctly said that, you know, all the statistics were phony. Now he claims that they're genuine and basically are his doing. So if things falls apart now, it's all going to be on Trump. And I think the Fed likes that.
Okay. Now, we've spoken about your views or one disagreement with Jim Rogers. The rest you concur with him, although the timing, you don't quite know when that's going to be. Okay, we understand that. Lee Adler is a person who is in the opposite camp to you because he thinks that there will be a normalization, so-called, of the yield curve, a normalization of the capital and bond markets, and liquidity will be reined in. And that is why he believes that we're coming very close to the top of the S&P 500. So the same outcome, but for a different reason.
So, yeah, well, again, you know, the market is extremely expensive, and it's built on all sorts of hope. You know, when you look at the sell-off we've had in the dollar, the initial rally the dollar had after Trump won was based on all the deregulation, all the tax cutting, all the economic growth that was going to result from this big reduction in government. We were going to get rid of Obamacare. All this good stuff was going to happen. We were going to cut corporate taxes. But none of that has actually happened. And the currency markets are beginning to factor in that. But the stock market hasn't given up any of its gains. It's still acting as if all the great things that everybody thought Trump was going to do were going to happen, when none of them have happened, and it looks more and more likely that none of them are going to happen.
We do have, of course, the small matter of corporate earnings. And as we speak, the Dow Jones rocketing to all-time record highs. And we have got results out from companies, you know, Dow Jones stalwarts like McDonald's, for example, Caterpillar. And these results aren't bad. And the market's embracing those things. So corporate America, in certain pockets, and not just the FANG stock, seems to be doing okay. Will the earnings sort of overtake all the ideas you've just put forward?
Well, certain companies, you mentioned Caterpillar, but I mean, there's a lot of exports related to Caterpillar. And I think a lot of the commodity sensitive stocks are reacting to the weakness of the dollar. I mean, I'm looking at like an 8% move up this morning in Freeport, and almost 9% in Freeport MacMoran, you know, which is a lot of copper, base metals, you know, oil prices are starting to move up. I think a lot of this is happening because of the weak dollar, not because of the strength in the U.S. economy. If you look at the sector that is most reflective of the U.S. economy, which would be the retailers, they're being decimated. I mean, retail sales are collapsing. This is the worst year for retail in the United States. It's even worse than it was in 2008 and 2009. This is, you know, the Great Recession, yet American consumers, you know, are spending less now than they were then. So things are not good in the U.S. economy. I mean, Americans are loaded up with debt. They've got record student loans, record credit card debt, record auto loans. The only reason we don't have record mortgage debt is because home ownership is at a 60-year low. So we have lots of Americans who no longer own homes, but they are renting, and rents are rising every year by rather substantial percentages. So the average American household is squeezed. The jobs are lousy. Real incomes are much lower now than they were when Obama was elected president. You know, people that used to have full-time jobs now have hobbled together multiple part-time jobs, yet they still don't make as much money as they used to make when they had one good job, you know, having two or three lousy jobs. So the U.S. economy is bad, and that's not why the stock market is rallying. Yeah.
We're looking last night at a video on YouTube of you being interviewed on CNBC. It was the 28th of August 2006, and there was a rather smug fellow on the other side of the interview, not the host, but another guest, and he laughed at you. And you called up the U.S. recession. You called it quite well. You didn't say exactly what time it would happen, but it was very close to the date of that interview. What are you calling now? Just reiterate, please.
Well, then I think the U.S. economy is in recession. In fact, I think it's been in recession for most of the recovery. It's just that the way that we score it, they take the nominal GDP, which has been at record low levels, you know, and then they deflate it by what the government claims the inflation rate is. And it's my contention that the number they're using for inflation is too low. I believe that prices are rising more rapidly than the government pretends. And so when you pretend that you have less inflation than you really have, then you also pretend that you have more growth than you really have. So the government is able to turn recession into recovery by lying about the inflation rate. And it's not necessarily like a lie where they get the number and then they fudge it and they change it. I just think the methodology that they use to calculate price increases over the years has been changed to favor a low number. They keep redoing the formula to basically reverse engineer the type of result they want, which is a low inflation rate. So, you know, if you look at the anecdotal evidence out there, the economy seems very, very weak. And if you look, it's more consistent with recession than recovery.
Okay. Let's hope that the predictions aren't correct. But one thing, of course, if the dollar is debased, and I've used the Trump example as my reason for its potential debasing, gold, of course, is the one that comes to the fore. It's showing a little bit of form at the moment, but it's still stuck in a range. When I spoke to an organization called GFMS Thomson Reuters, they're looking for 1,400 by the end of the year and then on from there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, gold prices have surprised me in the fact that given this incredible dollar weakness, that the price of gold hasn't moved much. We're still around, you know, $1,250 an ounce on gold, despite the weakness of the dollar, which means that gold prices in terms of other currencies are much weaker than they are in dollar terms, because the dollar is weak, yet gold is, you know, kind of stable. But I don't think that this is going to continue much longer. I do think that if the dollar continues to weaken, which is my belief, that ultimately it's going to spark a huge rise in the price of gold. I think there are a lot of speculators who have been shorting gold, just like there were a lot of speculators who were shorting foreign currencies. I mean, the most crowded trade on Wall Street when the year began was long the dollar. And you can see how that's turned out. It's been a disaster. Well, you have another crowded trade on Wall Street, and that's short gold. And I think that is going to end in an even bigger disaster. So the question is, when is gold going to break out of this level? Again, it's anybody's guess, but I think the breakout is coming, and I'm long, and I'm going to wait and make money. And, you know, I'm also looking at things like oil, and I think that's another commodity that's going to break out. There's been a lot of negativity on the oil price, and oil now is around $47 a barrel. I mean, it's still holding out below resistance. But if the dollar continues to weaken, which is my belief, I mean, oil is going to break out. And I think, you know, once we get oil maybe above $60 a barrel, you know, clear out a lot of the resistance in the low to mid 50s. I mean, oil prices are headed higher too. And there is a very good correlation long term between the price of oil and the price of gold. And there's usually a relationship between the two. So I think you're going to see a new bull market in oil, and I think you're going to see it in gold and other commodities too, industrial commodities. I mean, as the dollar drops, that means that commodity prices are falling around the world because they're priced in dollars and supply and demand. If the price of something goes down, the demand for that something goes up. And so I think you're going to see an explosion in demand for all sorts of commodities. And the other flip side of a weak dollar is it's great for the emerging markets. It's great for any countries that have dollar-denominated debt, because all of a sudden that debt becomes a lot less expensive to service, a lot less expensive to repay. It's like a gigantic tax cut. It frees up resources. And so, you know, if the dollar continues to weaken, you're going to see some tremendous growth outside the United States, and that is also going to lead to additional demand for raw materials, commodities, and things like that.
Well, Peter, we'll leave it on that optimistic note from a South African point of view. Thanks so much for your time this evening. That's Peter Schiff from Euro Pacific Capital speaking to us from Connecticut, United States. Thanks for listening to Fine Business Radio this evening on FMR 101.3 FM. The show has been proudly brought to you by Prudential Investment Managers, and we'll be back at the same time tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. Have a good evening. Good night.
Fine Business Radio with Lindsay Williams is proudly sponsored by Prudential Investment Managers.